to where Death Holler brought us. Season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. And now Death Holler brings us the most shocking season ever. Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head, that seems to work out.
Now, accept the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Holler brings back the dead. Remember, when you're in Death Holler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
Everyone, welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, Reverend Dr. Death. Joining me as always, my co-host, La Urena. And this episode is the remake to Rabid from 2019. No tagline, unfortunately, or none that I could find, which is a shame given the movie. Directed by Jen and Sylvia Soska, aka the Twisted Twins. Came to predominance with American Mary. They did like a short before that, which is Body in a Trunk or something like that. I believe it's kind of Tarantino-esque, but they very much fit into the horror mold since then. And they're pretty based, to be honest. I mean, as far as their political beliefs, I mean, not saying that they're right wing or left wing, but they seem to have a good sense about them on a lot of stuff. Good sense of humor too, which is nice.
Yeah.
And I feel like the theme of this movie makes it to where even if they aren't like, you know, left leaning, they at least, I mean, the feminism angle is there, not in a bad way. It's actually pretty intelligently done. Written by John Surge, who did the story and the screenplay. The Soska sisters did the or helped with the screenplay as well. Music by Claude Foyce. Budget of $5 million. I really couldn't find a good box office. I think it made around the same back. So, I mean, it didn't necessarily lose money, if that's to be believed. But
yeah,
it didn't. But if they advertised it at all, it did lose a little bit of money in the long run. Principal players, we have Laura Vandervoort playing Rose, the ugly duckling turned feral swan in the movie. she was in the TV show Bitten, which is about a female werewolf, I believe. And I could believe she could play a character like that after playing Rose.
Yeah.
Smallville, she played Supergirl, aka Kara Zor-El. And she was actually in the movie Jigsaw, was one of the horror movies she did besides this one.
Nice.
Haneke Talbot played Chelsea, model and Rose's friend / sister. They're kind of adopted siblings, but still, I mean, she kind of views her that way. She was in the movie Possessor, which I've heard all accounts is actually really good. It's, I want to say it's Cronenberg's, son who made that movie. So
okay.
kind of interesting that she's in the, you know, both that and the remake to her, you know, David Cronenberg's movie. And then she was in Ready or Not. She was, I think, you know, the one rich bitch that was like in it to like with the two kids or whatever.
Yes.
I think that was her. I think that she was, you know, like that lady. And then, actually she might've been one of the, now that I think about it, one of the maids that got killed in the movie.
Oh yeah. 'Cause he had a type.
He did. And then she was in an episode of Supernatural, just throwing that out there.
Of course.
We usually do. Benjamin Hollingsworth plays Brad Hart, the pseudo love interest in the movie. We'll get to that, whether or not he actually is. He was in, the only real thing I saw that was horror related was Joyride 3 Roadkill that he was in.
Didn't realize there was more than one Joyride.
That's what I was surprised. I was really surprised there was more than one of those.
Fuck. The fact that we don't know there was a 2 and a 3 and who knows what else is pretty bad considering what we do for fun. But, like, it scares me because that is going to be a review. And it scares me to think. I just know the fucking fans are going to be like, you should do 2 and 3. And we're going to be like, fuck.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to ask us to do Joyride as, like, a secondary, like, movie to, like, The Hitcher or something.
Yeah.
Or Duel. I mean, Duel's probably the closest to it. But Part 3?
Yeah.
Ted Atherton plays Dr. William Burroughs, a doctor who seeks immortality. And this guy, it's not an accident like Dr. Kloyd in the first movie that he discovers it. This guy's been pursuing this shit,
yeah,
like in a very evil way. Funny thing about this, I had to look it up. So William Atherton is the name of the actor who played the asshole in Ghostbusters. You know, he was the EPA guy that shut down their, you know, containment unit. He was also in Die Hard. He was the asshole journalist at the end of the movie that revealed John McClane was actually, you know, married to Holly or whatever her name is. Anyways, I looked to see if they were related, and they're not, because William Atherton is actually William Atherton Knight. He just dropped the Knight part of his name to become an actor, so this is a different guy. Okay. Just interesting that I saw. You don't see Atherton that often. You know?
I have also never seen, have not seen Die Hard.
Oh my God.
I know. And it is one of those movies that's on the list of Raina. You have to watch it. You're going to love it. So it is one of those challenges that you and Noah have given me.
See, that one is so hype now that I don't know if you can enjoy it the right way is the problem, because I have told people about that movie that's never seen it, and they watch it and they're like, yeah, it's a pretty good action movie. I'm like, pretty good action movie? What the fuck are you saying? That is fucking one of the best.
I feel like I might like it, given that it's Bruce Willis and he was an amazing action film. He's an amazing actor in general. I don't see this movie. I don't feel like people overhype it. The only overhyping I get from this, and I think you can appreciate it, is it's a Christmas film.
The Christmas thing does really push people the other way, because they'll fight it and they'll say, there's nothing Christmas about this movie. And you're like, it takes place at Christmas. It's got Christmas music.
Yeah.
The theme of the movie is families coming together. Like, what do you need to make it a Christmas movie? I mean, technically, Home Alone, if you took away just a little bit of the red and, you know, green coloration of the movie, is really just a home invasion movie. I mean,
yeah,
you know, so, you know.
Wait. But does Die Hard have an ass load of Christmas music? Because Home Alone did.
It does have, it actually has, what is it, the Fat Boys playing whatever their Christmas in L.A. or whatever that song is that they sung. It's got some kind of bells song toward the end of it that is kind of pseudo associated with Christmas. So it's not that far. It's not full of it, but it's got some in the movie.
If and when I watch Die Hard, because that has to be a thing. I know you guys are getting to the point where you're going to strap me to a chair and toothpick my eyes open. I am here to tell you, I am not here to fight that it's a Christmas film. I could care less, not about the film. I have a feeling it's going to be a good film. I enjoyed those films back in the day. And I've probably watched a good chunk of it, just not watched it all the way from beginning to end. But I don't understand why people would want to fight that. Why does it matter if it is a Christmas film or that it's not a Christmas film? Let me rephrase. To me, it sounds like it has enough aspects to make it a Christmas, you know, action film. Why would people want to fight the opposite? That's beyond me. So
the only thing that I get out of it is the people who fight it are the diehards, that fight, that, you know, say that it's not in the same league as like Elf, which is nothing but a Christmas movie. Oh. And I'll give them that. That's true. But there are so many movies that we watch at Christmas time that are just so tangentially related to Christmas.
Yeah.
That, I mean, so for instance, what is that movie that came out just a couple years back with David Harbour in it, where he plays Santa Claus and he goes around like killing people?
Violent Night.
Violent Night. Yeah. That is Die Hard. It's literally Die Hard with more Christmas added to it. That's what that movie is. They even call it out in the middle of the fucking movie. I mean,
and hot David Harbour Santa bod.
Well, Bruce Willis is not like, I mean, he's kind of got a normal everyday looking Die Hard. That's the whole point of that movie. Yeah. But I could have a whole podcast about that movie. I'm just going to leave it alone. Anyways. Ted Atherton, didn't say a whole lot, but he was involved in a lot of episodes of a cartoon about the mafia called Forget About It. So okay. There you go. I mean, Mackenzie Gray plays Gunter, the fashion industry mogul / designer / weirdo / could be a pedophile. Maybe. Just saying. he was in Legion, which is a really good Marvel TV show. I mean, it really was. Festival of the Living Dead, also by the Soska sisters, also is a direct link to Night of the Living Dead. I liked it okay. I thought it was all right for a Tubi movie especially. And he was actually in an episode of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Interesting.
He was a teacher. He played a teacher in one of the episodes.
Which, if you really want to kick it old school with us, some of our, I think our first season had Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Yes.
Yes, our first season of Death Holler, I apologize, our audio has gotten better, and our audio is still not the best, but, like, our audio has significantly improved. We were definitely green peas.
Oh, yeah, it was pretty bad.
But you know what? But hey, you live and learn.
It happens.
Yeah.
You know. Stephen Huszar plays Dominic, the actor on a hospital soap opera that is the first to become a rabid zombie.
Oh, yeah.
CM Punk, of all people, plays as Billy. He's credited as Philip Brooks. I guess it's his real name. He's the drunk that's just looking for some action. They kicked him out of the bar, you know, later on in the movie. And that's whenever Rose really gets into her predator vibe and stalks him, you know, while he's trying to hit on other women that don't want to have anything to do with him.
Man, he has got a body.
Yes. And then Sylvia and Jen Soska are both in the movie. If the scene that you'll remember them from, they play Bev and Ellie, are whenever the two catty twins go into one of the bathroom stalls and snort coke while they're talking about Rose, that she overhears it, and that's kind of sets up the drama in the movie. That's the Soska sisters. They kind of, you know, threw themselves. They kind of throw themselves into a lot of their movies, but that's them in that scene.
That's kind of cool. I like that.
Synopsis. An aspiring fashion designer who doesn't quite fit in gets into a horrible motorcycle accident that leaves her jaws wired shut and horrific damage to her face, as well as some damage to her abdomen, even though it's kind of shown in her chest area, but that's a whole other thing. It's horrific, too. I give them credit. I'm going to say it right now. That makeup effect on her face is 100%. Like, I mean, it's the thing that nightmares are made of. She is referred to an experimental treatment facility that specializes in stem cell research, and she undergoes a miraculous recovery. I.e., one of the her friend Chelsea even comments she's like Spider-Man. She suddenly doesn't have to wear glasses. Mm-hmm. Her skin is perfect. She's glowing. She's hot, folks. She's I mean, drastically different. Filled with a newfound confidence, and if you looked like her, you would have that, Rose quickly finds that her hunger can only be satiated with a special protein found in human blood, and everyone that she feeds on becomes a rabid psychopath. The plague of super rabies begins spinning out of control as Rose struggles to hold on to her humanity in a very literal sense, because she starts becoming something else. Brad is stalking, Rose is sleepwalking, and Burroughs is mocking God. And there you go. That's my synopsis. Visuals. They are so fucking good with the gore in this movie.
Hold on, I gotta go back up. Yeah, $5 million, but this had a smaller budget than fucking Repo.
Yep, it did, by $3 million.
By $3.5 million.
Yeah.
Holy fuck! Holy goddamn!
The Soska sisters are smart, because when they exceed what they can show without it looking goofy, they hide it. That scene where Rose is down the alleyway, and she pulls a Beetlejuice, where you see the things come out of her face. Smart move, because if they tried showing it, I guarantee you their budget wouldn't have, it would have looked awful.
Which is so funny, because I wanted to see it, but I'm grateful we didn't. But man, everything that they did, I can't tell you anything visually that I did not like about this movie at all. Not one single thing.
The scene, I'll give you one that's perfect to me. The scene where she's in the bathroom. That's when she runs off from her boy toy at that time, you know, the heart, and she runs into the bathroom, and she looks into her mouth, and it is so corroded and gross.
And then she has that thing under her tongue.
That thing under her tongue starts to ooze out. Oh man, perfect.
That was so good. The lining around her gums. It was perfection.
The scene at the end that really stole my heart was the creature that was William Burroughs' wife.
Yes.
I have longed to see something like that in a movie, and they did it, like, on this budget. Like, she didn't move very much.
What did they call it why can't I think? Not Ash versus Evil Dead, but Evil Dead, the 2013 remake. What did they call her?
The abomination or whatever.
This was an abomination.
Yes. This looked every bit like you would imagine a Cronenberg monster to look. Like, I mean, it was good.
It was perfection.
I'm trying to think. So, the critics online, I saw one of them because I was reading some reviews on IMDb. They threw out there that the makeup in the beginning of the movie looks awful. Now, I have some bones to pick with that, because I know what they're referencing. So, Gunter, he's got this weird, like, almost, you know, like how corpses look when they've got a little too much makeup on to cover up the fact that they're yellow or whatever, you know, the embalming stuff does. And it's really pancaked on. He's got that through the whole movie. And it looks more out there in the beginning of the movie because it's bright and sunny and all that. And later on, everything gets darker. But that's also part of the visual storytelling that the Soska sisters are doing that I appreciated, because the movie gets darker as you go along, just like the character does. But he's got that pancake makeup on. You could sit there and argue that that's bad makeup effects. I argue that that's Gunter as a character, because he is very weirdly, you know, that effeminate type, even though he's surrounding himself with these very young, very moldable women. You know, he's a predator in his own right.
Yeah.
And he's vain. So he's got that makeup on to cover up his own, like, age.
Age and imperfections. Oh, perfect. Well, you said it at the same time. Yeah. Do you think that the actor's accent was real? It sounded like a really horrible French accent.
it was German at times. Mm-hmm. So, like, it was vaguely European, is all I'll say.
Okay. Which he apparently has dual citizenship between Canada and the UK, I believe. But, and I can understand Canada, because they do have people that speak nothing but French.
Yes.
So
we didn't bring up in the episode for 1977, but there was whole scenes in that movie where they talked to the Montreal's, like, mayor or whatever, and he was like, had that French Canadian accent, and it just was kind of funny to listen to.
Yeah.
That's all the thing.
So I don't know. I felt like his was exaggerated though. I don't feel like it's
could
his...
you not imagine that character playing up his Eurocentric,
that's true.
You know?
Okay. That makes sense.
And the other one that I think that they're talking about is Rose's makeup, because her face looks awful at the beginning of the movie, but to me, it represented that she's got like her skin. You know, some people have that skin that's got like the coloration's like weird, like mm-hmm. it's a little bit bluer in areas, a little bit.
Yes.
You know, redder.
I have discoloration. Absolutely.
Yes. And it serves a purpose, because when you see how she looks in the beginning, I didn't even notice this. She's got a curve to her nose, and she brings it up in the movie because she calls to it in a very good little visual scene where when she gets fixed later, she moves her finger down her nose, and she don't like notice the bump anymore. It's like her nose is perfectly curved now. They did that to show how glowing her skin looks when she makes the transition over into the new Rose.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
If you didn't have that frumpy Rose, you wouldn't notice how big of a difference she looks later on.
They change her. Yes, they did a good job. I understood that she had to be somewhat frumpier at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
And dull looking. But when you are dull looking, you also need to have dull looking skin. And what they did is everything that I told you guys in the last episode. I am fighting for my life to naturally take care of my face without any fillers, Botox, anything like that. And part of that is your skincare. If your skin is glowing without any makeup or anything like that, just moisturizer and sunblock and things like that, then it's going to look good with makeup. And they managed to make that a thing in this movie. To someone like me, an older woman understands that, holy fuck, they made her skin so good that even when she's wearing makeup, it looks good. Because if you have shitty skin and you put makeup on, you're going to look like fucking, what's his name?
Gunther. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So kudos to them, because they didn't even just go with, oh, we're just going to slap some makeup on her to make her look good. We're going to make her skin glowing even when it looks like she's not wearing makeup. And I'm like, fuck.
So I have a bone to pick with the people that throw up the makeup. I don't think they realize what the intent of that bad quote unquote makeup was.
Yeah. I don't think they did either. I don't think they understood the reason. I don't know that it was bad makeup. It was just that she wasn't meant to be pretty.
Exactly. And she needed, and to be honest, Chelsea as a model, I'm just throwing this out there, is totally upstage once Rose comes mm-hmm. out of her shell later on. If the actress had been as pretty as she was at the beginning, you would never believe that Chelsea was the, you know, the model of the two sisters, and that she was this, you know, fashion designer if she didn't look frumpy like she did.
You know, I would have, because I've seen some models that they have the body, but they don't, they have their face, to me, isn't visually appeasing. Like, they have really bushy eyebrows, or they have really thick eyebrows, or their eyes are really small, or they have no eyebrows. That's a thing in modeling. And you're like, that's a model? But it's just that weird.
Don't make fun of Mia Goth. I mean, she rocks the no eyebrows. Come on now.
Probably the only one, but she's not even like, she's not like a real, real model, but like, there's rare a model, like, unless you're a Victoria's Secret angel, you're not a model that's pretty in the face and in the body. You're just a, you know, you're just a model. And it's like they like that weird, not crazily pretty look, and that's supposed to be fashion and inspiration, you know?
Yeah, let's be honest, a lot of fashion models look like 12-year-old boys. I mean, it's sad, there you go. That's what they look like.
Yes.
So, I mean, it just, there's that, and something else I'm going to call out for the visuals, because I noticed this and I appreciated so much what they were doing with this. The Saskia sisters took the fashion thing and actually worked it into the story. When Rose becomes the predator, what does she start wearing? They even call it out at the beginning of the movie, because somebody throws a fur coat down and because she's a vegan, and she's like, oh, you know, that what they have to kill, how many do they have to kill to get that coat? She wears nothing but fur and red, for the rest of the movie. Red for the blood, and then the fur for the, you know, that she's like a wolf-like character from then on out.
Yes, I love it. Did you also notice that Rose wore a fur coat or had a fur coat at the end of the other film that looked just like the one that was in this film? Or was that a blanket? Is whatever she was covering herself in before that other, you know, rabid person attacked her at the end.
That's true. She did have that. But that rose started out in leather, so it was like she was already kind of, you know, in that sense.
Yeah,
but
it just resembled what Rose was wearing, and I was like, oh, I know they took that from the previous film.
Well, that's something else that I don't think people are giving credit, because if you look at the IMDb of this movie, the ratings are like 5 or something, and I don't think that people are giving credit to the Saska sisters. They took elements of the original movie and twisted it in a way that worked. It's not the same movie. It's not like just a twist or iteration on the original movie. Like, you bring up the thing with Rose, like, you know, wearing the coat in the first movie and this one, they work. They even call out at the beginning of the movie. They've got Gunter, and his whole speech that he's given to all the people in the fashion building that they're working in is he's talking about when you go into remake something, you need to iterate on it. You need to add your soul to it, or there's no point in making it. That's the Saska sisters is basically saying, we're making a remake and we're putting our own twist on it. You know, like we're taking elements from the original movie, and something I appreciate about this movie that they did, and this gets into the story a little bit, is they did not take and make a lot of the action initially in the Colloid Clinic. In fact, the only thing that happens in the Colloid Clinic in this one is she bites Dominic. Every other thing takes place outside of it.
Yes.
And I like that twist because, frankly, it was getting a little claustrophobic in the first movie for what they were trying to do, sticking it all within that clinic. Like, I liked whenever they got outside of it, you know, more.
Yeah.
In that sense.
I like how part of this, what they switched was having Rose needing facial reconstruction. I think it just worked so good in this film.
It did. And that, again, that effect, that of her with the jaw and it wired shut and just huge, like the skin just like draping down over top of her jaw like an open wound, and her having to suck on the protein or on the, like her food and before she gets to the blood protein, the food that her Chelsea makes her like mix up in the blender, that is so nasty and awkward, and you feel so sympathetic to the character when she's sitting there and she's trying to drink it and she's choking on it because it's really well done.
Yeah.
I thought they did a good job with that.
They did a super good job. You know, which was funny though, is that I don't know if you had to think about it or if you just knew right off the bat that those protein drinks she was drinking was either flesh or blood or whatever, but like every time she drank from it, there was no like remnants of blood on her lips at all. It was like she was drinking water.
Yeah. I mean, like they didn't show it, but I think that was kind of their way of hiding it until the reveal when she drops it later on.
I just thought it was funny because like there's no way you're drinking tomato juice, let alone blood, and it not be on your lip a little bit. And I was like, what the fuck are they giving her? That's, you know, it's got to be blood because it's the only thing she can have.
Yeah, because we find out through the course of the movie that she and that's one thing that I love about this movie versus the first one. We go through and watch her as, you know, personally try to integrate back into society. Every time she tries regular food, she can't. She can't eat it anymore.
She's not vegetarian anymore. She's not vegan.
And that's something I'm going to throw out for the Saska sisters. I think they were making fun of vegans with whole scene.
Oh, absolutely. That shit was funny.
And they'll probably admit it because I follow them now because they're in with Eric July with the Ripperverse stuff, making comics for him. And they talk about like, you know, they love hamburgers. They're just regular, you know, chicks or whatever. And so they would totally hate the Hollywood. Like, I'm a vegan, you know, I don't eat, you know, meat. That's those are living things. It's like, well, so are the plants. And there's evidence out there from science that they scream when we cut them, you know. Yeah. So are you any better than us when you're eating that stuff? Just saying.
But yeah.
Anyways. But yeah, she has to change her diet completely, but then like she goes the other route. Just story-wise, I love the fact that she goes after the men in this movie. Like, she still baits them, like yes. she does with Billy. But, like, and that scene's so well done, too, because he's already, like, hit on the black chick that's standing outside the club, and she's like, fuck off. Like, I just want to stand out here and have a moment to myself. And I heard the Saska sisters talk about that, and they said they wanted that scene in there because, as women, they said they get so tired of that when they just want a moment of themselves. Yeah. And some guy just comes up and just will not leave them alone.
I feel like that's a young woman thing. Granted, I've not been bothered enough to where I'm not being left alone, but like there's these old like guys at Starbucks that if I run into them, they want to buy my coffee and they want nothing in return other than to say that they bought a coffee for a pretty lady. And I am fucking for that. Okay. I will take a compliment. I will take a coffee.
Old men get by with a lot of stuff they with sure younger do. Women because they don't view them as threats anymore. That guy, as big as he was, yeah, and everything, he was a threat. He was definitely a threat.
Yeah, if we're intimidated by you, we don't want to be bothered. But if we're not intimidated by you, we're welcoming.
But when she gets him in the car, that whole scene, how it plays out, how she's just like, you know, she's leaning into it. She's like, I don't really have anywhere to go. I think I'm supposed to be right here, or however she says And it totally plays into his ego, and she's like, all right, jackpot, your food, you know.
Loser.
I like how they did it in this movie. The only one she doesn't do that to, and that shows that she's got control, is Hard or whatever.
Yeah, Hard.
And Brad, here's my thing about this story-wise. We find out toward the end of the movie that Burroughs, after the clinic, after she was released, hired Brad to spy on Rose. Do you feel like he was genuine in his concern for her? Because it gives implications throughout the movie that he, even before he was hired, he was dropping off flowers to her.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and she didn't notice, so it was all for, you know, his sake that he was doing it. But do you think then he was genuine when he said that he really cared about her when they were locked in the room together with the abomination?
Yeah, I do. Because it felt like, yes, I was hired. He, you know, had he given a proper opportunity to explain himself, I feel like, because I don't think he was given that, I was hired to do it. But that was, like, I genuinely wanted to stay close to you. Like, I wanted to make sure you were okay. I was concerned. And he had reason to be concerned. He had an idea something was going on.
I mean, he had to basically, after her feedings, he was the one that was always bringing her back home and getting her away from the thing.
Yes. So, and like, even after, like, he wasn't afraid of her even after he knew what was going on. The fact that he could tame her fucking vagina snake was like, and I was like, this guy cares for her because he could have ran at any opportunity.
Yeah, that scene, I don't know how you felt about it. I thought it was actually pretty cool where, like, she's down on the ground and those, because her stomach's just gnawing at her and, like, eating her from the inside out. And those guys run up on her and, like, that vagina snake just, like, snaps out and, like, grabs the one's throat or whatever and, like, takes him out instantly. And, like, it's sitting there like a snake that's getting ready to strike while Brad's, like, moving around it. And he knows he covers it up really quick and then jabs her with the stuff to knock her out.
I feel like her on the ground with that weird ass vagina snake coming out is like a perfect representation of my ovulation possibly having endometriosis. It's fucking painful as hell. There's really nothing you can do, and if you could have a snake come out and fucking bite people, dude, I would do it in a heartbeat. In fact, is this clinic really exist? Because like, will it help me with my pain? Like, I mean, I don't know. I'm just looking for a more natural kind of thing. I don't want to have to take pain pills for the rest of my life. So
that's something else that, I mean, this goes into acting a little bit, and I'm not getting off story because there's one thing I want to bring up because we already mentioned it in the last episode, but I want to bring it back up here. As far as the acting goes, I really like how the actress in this one played up the pain way more than Marilyn did in the original movie.
So good. It's so good. And I feel like her pain and her hunger was what was driving her. And that's the thing. That's what bothered me in the previous Roses. I just feel like, again, she was just floating through this situation, whereas this Rose was fighting for her fucking life. Literally.
Yeah, and being gaslit the entire time, because every time she would think of something, it's like, you know, Burroughs was like, remember, you'll have hallucinations and the medicine will take care of that, or might be the cause of it, or whatever. So yeah. She's like, is any of this real? Like, you know, she doesn't even have that to go off of.
Yes. So
the other thing I was going to mention that from before, story-wise, that we mentioned, is I love how this movie keeps it on the main character, especially Rose, mm-hmm. but it works in the zombie apocalypse around yes. her. We have a few scenes that are outside of Rose, like in the hospital, yes. wherever the one guy, or, you know, a Dominic or whatever, the one that he bit, ends up biting the nurse and all that. But they're very far and few between that one scene where she's with Brad eating and the zombie comes crashing. That's, I think, a much better integration of the two
oh, yes.
storylines going together.
It's everything still is centered around Rose, which is how it should be. She's the alpha coochie, if you will. the thing about it is that I had told you in the chat, I was like, we got to talk about this. I thought it was funny how they're talking about a contagious type of rabies. They don't know how it's contagious because they're like, well, there's people getting it that aren't having the close contact that, you know, they should be, because, like, we can understand that it's spread sexually, but, like, there's people that aren't intimate that, you know, you see, like, moms and baby rabies and things like that. But, like, for them not knowing how it transfers, you see any of these fuckers freaking out and putting a mask on?
Well, yeah, they're not, but I can't remember. I know in the first movie they say it might have been that mayor, that French-Canadian mayor, says if it bites, you know, avoid it, and if you get bit, get seen by a doctor immediately. I don't think they say that in this movie. The yeah, CDC guy doesn't.
They don't. They kind of just like, oh, my God, this is a super, it's going to cause mass hysteria. And I'm like, cool. And it's like, but for, like, a simple flu, we were like, I'll throw your masks on. And this, it's like, people are killing each other.
It's funny that this came out in 2019 and then know. What happened the year, just a year later. But,
oh, my God. back to the story, though. I think that for today's times, it worked very well to include facial reconstruction or reconstructive surgery of any kind. On this one, I think that it really worked out, because when she saw her face, could you imagine having a face like that, even not as a woman, that where your value is mostly based on your looks?
Yeah, I mean, it was basically a miracle. You wake up and you're perfect at that
exactly.
point.
Exactly. Like, and more than perfect. You've improved tenfold.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not on the inside, and they say it's the inside that counts, but on the outside, man, you're like if you're California 9 or 10, you're fucking doing real well in the world.
Because that goes to the end of the movie. I mean, she kills herself, but she really doesn't, because yeah. we have that scene afterward where, you know, Burroughs brings it up. It's just like, you've got regenerative abilities. You can't die that easy.
This movie practically made me cry. I was emotional at parts of this film. I felt so bad for her.
Yeah, and I mean, and the only bad part of this movie, I think, as far as story, and it's just a nitpick, is I wanted one more scene to establish a relationship between Chelsea and her before the transition.
Yeah, I actually would have liked that. I didn't not like their relationship, but I think it's one of those things that would have been beneficial. We didn't get it, and it's still okay, but yeah, I can't see that hurting the film.
It wouldn't have hurt it, because it would just gave us one little bit to establish. I mean, we get it a little bit in that scene where, you know, Brad comes over and she's like, oh, did you know what happened with Brad? You know, and she knows what happens to Brad because she set it up. But, like, you know, she's sitting there and she's interested. So we get that, and it's good. It's good shorthand. But it's just one more scene would have cemented that, like, sisterly bond that they had yeah. together.
The only nitpick I have, and this is just in life in general too, but this movie kind of spells it out, is that there's no communication. Because if I was upset with my friend over trying to set me up with a hunky guy, like, yeah, I told him to ask you, okay, but did he want to ask me out? Because I wanted to know, this is so dumb, this would not have added to this story, but I feel like, have some fucking communication. You guys are really good friends, but, like, I would want to know, well, did you tell him to ask me out because he liked me, he just wasn't sure he should ask me out? Or did you tell him out of pity? Because I want to know. Like, if he, I'm not going to be mad if, like, you talk to a guy and was like, yeah, she really likes you. He's like, oh, man, thank you. I've been wondering because I've been meaning to ask her out, you know? That's how I feel it was that he meant to ask her out, but he just was nervous.
And see, I got that in the movie, but I also got the fact that Rose is so, I'm trying to think of
introverted?
The word. Well, it's not introverted. She's got so much, like, self-doubt.
Oh, yeah.
There's another word that I'm thinking of. But anyways, like, she's got so much self-doubt that she naturally disbelieves that he was well-intended when he came to it, and that Chelsea didn't do it out of pity. Like, her first thought was it was pity, because why would you do anything for me other than pity? Because your family pitied me because my family died in a car accident. They had to take me in, and, you know, I got this, like, nose issue from the accident that, you know, into my face, and she's got so much self-doubt and so much, like, you know, internalized, like, you know, like, hatred of herself. That, like, I don't think she can see the good in other people at that point.
Yeah, so I think that Chelsea's intentions were completely good, as well as Hart's intentions. I don't think they were as bad as, you know, as she was Rose was trying to make them, or thinking that they were in her head. So I think she kind of realized at the end, but it was too little too late.
Yeah, it was too late by the time, and then whenever, you know, and then he, like, that's the ultimate fuck you to, I mean, everything is that Burroughs wins.
Yes, yes.
And he's the worst in the movie. Like, I mean, you can, whatever thoughts you might have assumed, if Brad is on the side of good or, you know, whatever, if he really means it, Burroughs intentionally gave her something that would, you know, make her a monster, because his whole thing is that he's trying to make people evolve. He is trying for transhumanism, which brings up another aspect of the story that I'm wondering, you know, and I might be seeing this into it. Saska sisters had to deal with Hollywood. They went on record. They didn't like a lot of stuff they saw in Hollywood. That's why they like filming more independent movies, you know, outside of that arena. There's a lot of stuff in this movie that kind of fits, like, the the conspiracy narrative. Mm-hmm. There's transhumanism linked with evil, because think of that scene where, you know, Burroughs is operating on her dressed in those red silky robes that make no sense for somebody to be wearing. They look satanic.
Yeah.
So it's got that angle built into it. You've got, I mean, she becomes a monster that's kind of removed from her humanity because of what they're doing. The people who are involved in this are all celebrities, because he says that to her when they go to the clinic. He said, normally only celebrities and elites come to us for, like, you know, facial reconstruction, to look youthful and all that stuff. And he's feeding her a liquid that's basically blood.
Yes.
Where that blood come from? You know, there's the whole conspiracy about baby blood being what, you know, creates, like, eternal youth for these actors and everything. It's like they're working AKA that in baby a little rabies. Bit. but I could be reading totally into that, and I mean, it's not meant, but, like, I could see them working some of that in there.
I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're too far-fetched. Like I said, this reminds me of, it's getting so bad. Vanity is becoming so bad out here in California that it's just, now it's just a competition of who looks like a better version of Kim Kardashian. You know, I swear to God, that's what everyone's turning into. It's getting creepy. Even, like, women my age and older trying to keep up with the Kardashians, and that's what I'm calling it, but it used to be keep up with the Joneses, but, like, now these older women are like, I want to get permanent makeup and I want to get this work done. It's like, we are already past our prime. You realize that, right? Like, even in our mid-30s, we were probably past our prime, or maybe that's where we were in it, but now we're past it, so...
And there's some people that went so far as to go the opposite end of that and actually they look transhuman, i.e. Madonna. Like, yes. I don't know if anybody's seen pictures of her. Oof. She should have just let age take her. Like, I mean, what she is now looks like a Cenobite from the Hellraiser movie.
Even Cher, with all her plastic surgery, still has, you know, she doesn't look youthful. She looks her age, but she looks like she's gotten work done, but she still looks, you know, mostly appropriate for her age. It's not anything where I'd be like, oh, I have to have surgery, I have to look like her. She's done what works for her. She doesn't look anything like Madonna. But it's getting so bad that this is, I feel like between this movie and Repo the Genetic Opera, which that was our special, you know, that we did, the vanity and what people will do to try to keep it is getting dangerous at this point. People are literally losing their lives over it.
And that's what I was wanting to bring up since you watched that movie, and it's kind of funny it ties into this movie so much, and we had no plans of this being like the connection. Which do you feel like addressed the issue better as far as like a cohesive story and all that?
Oh, God, when it comes to cohesive, we're talking about this movie, Rabbit 2019. Yeah. Okay. There was nothing cohesive at all about Repo, and that's its own discussion. If you want to go listen to that, it's going to be released before this one, but... Yeah, this one was very cohesive. And it's funny because she didn't even want vanity. She just got it. You know, but she got more than she asked for in general. Like, she couldn't even afford to just have basic reconstructive surgery that would have made her look like a Frankenstein, you know?
Yeah, she got, like, catapulted to, like, you know, like, basically like goddess status, you know, yes. Is what she, you know, where she ended up. I also find it interesting, the movie, and this goes back to visuals, but also story, like her creative spark comes to her, but it's a very dark and almost demonic, yes, like creative, you know, spark, because all of her designs are like feral. They're like very, the blood is there, the redness, and Gunter is like, this is perfect. This is what I'm wanting, you know, from this. And it's like, okay, that kind of fits the fashion industry, like operating on negative, like, you know, energy and working that into their designs. But
it, his campaign, his beauty campaign,
Schadenfreude,
it was giving derelict.
It was. Well, he kind of looked like,
yes,
Derek or Zoolander. So
God, who was he? Didn't look like Zoolander. He looked like God, I forgot who the guy was. What's his name's character in Zoolander?
Well, he looked like the like a very ratchet looking version of Derek Zoolander. Like if he aged up and tried to keep his vanity, you know, about him.
He was giving a little bit of Mugatu as well.
Yeah, a little bit of that weird European, but not really European vibe that he had going on. We've not talked about acting. I feel like everybody, now I've heard, I saw the complaints on there that they felt like they were a little too soap opery, like, you know, the beginning.
Oh, Hart definitely was. Stuff. Hart was giving. Hart and the guy who played the cute doctor, the first one, who, you know, kind of got infected, they were both playing, they definitely were giving daytime fucking novellas.
But the one guy was a soap opera actor in the movie, so it kind of made sense for him.
And that's true.
Hart's the only one that's a little too much.
Yeah, like. It was. He was super cute. Like, he came to, like, he had his good and bad moments. His bad moments were definitely in the cafe when he was trying to tell her how he felt. I was like, this is so daytime television.
The Saska sisters, you can say what you want to about their acting. I just thought it was kind of funny. They were just being catty. It's like, oh my God, did you hear about her while they're sitting there snorting their, yes, cocaine? And then I love the little touch that, and I mean, this had to have been, they've done it before, which they've not hinted that they have, or they've seen enough people where Jen, I believe, to her sister Sylvia, like, you know, touched up her nose a little bit. She was like, oh, you got a little bit there. I'm going to dab it away. Yeah. You know, now you're, and she's like, how do I look now? She's like, oh, it's perfect. Let's go. You know? Like, I thought they did, that was pretty fun, making fun of the people they've seen in Hollywood type moment.
Yeah,
you know?
Even when one was rubbing it on her teeth, yeah, like in between, I was like, I don't have enough experience with this, but holy crap, that's a, you're doing something there. I really liked the Siska sisters. I didn't know that that was them. They did a good job of playing catty. They did a good job of playing bitches in the industry. They did a good job of playing, you know, vanity models, if you will, and their characters were unlikable, and that's what their job was.
Yeah, that's the whole point of,
yeah,
it. And it's just funny too, because if you've seen them in real life, you know, for the Ripaverse stuff, they're comic book nerds. They're like, you know, they're really into horror. Like, they're nerds like us, but it's kind of funny that they, you know, step into that role.
They look good doing it too. So there's that. I want to say that probably aside from Rose, because I think the actress was great and the girl who played her friend, I thought they had really good chemistry together. But the doctor was very smooth and very villainous.
the only moment he had that I felt like was a little too much was his no moment at the end of it, kind of like that, you know, Vader scene from whatever it is, the I can't remember the last movie in that prequel trilogy, whatever the name was. Yeah. No, not The Empire Strikes Back, but like the prequels that George did. Anyways, whatever that is, and people are probably screaming at me right now.
I know, we're both Star Wars fans too. Well, I'm a bigger Star Wars fan.
I don't like the prequels, so I'm not going to take any. I mean, there's Attack of the Clones, and then there's the Phantom Menace, and I just can never remember that last movie.
Oh, Return of the Jedi.
That's the second trilogy. That's, you're thinking,
well, wait, you're talking about when he dies, yeah, or no, when wait,
no, that's whenever Amidala dies is what I'm saying in the first movie, and then Vader's just like no.
Okay, I'm sorry,
I laughed whenever I saw that in theater, but I got a little bit of vibe from that, but the scene after saved him, because like the way that he was just like, you know, just kind of like, bitch, you're mine now, like you're never going to die.
Yeah,
like, you I was like, oh man, that he did good with that.
His cheesiest line was, get your hands off my wife. Sir, why did you put a dangerous fucking monster that you fucking built in with your precious wife? Did you think were going to become besties?
I think he might have hoped that they've got a little tentacle action going on with each other.
He is a monster.
He is. Now, I did like the little story bit where the reason she turned out the way she did was because she had a cancer that they didn't anticipate. Yeah. And the cancer, in addition to her regular skin, mm-hmm. mutated and became, you know, the way that it did.
Yeah.
So, which kind of ties in, it's kind of a twist in the first movie, because that's why Rose has the weird thing in the first movie, is because it's a cancer type situation. And they just went with it in this movie. So. Yeah. That's what I really like about this is remake. It takes elements and you can see them clear, like they're where they took them from, but they went a different direction with it. Music was fine. I didn't have a problem with a lot of club music, which was appropriate because they were going clubbing a lot, but nothing really that was a detriment to the scenes or anything. It, you know, when it wanted to be like, you know, play up the fact that she was attacking and, you know, it you got like that. Kind of that music kind of fit that scene, you know, like heart pumping type, you know, music that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Going to move on to trivia. Dr. William Burroughs is named after writer William S. Burroughs. As Rose is healing from the procedure, Dr. Burroughs actually listens to a recording of Advice for Young People in which the author William S. Burroughs talks about psychic vampires. This is the quote in the movie, if after being exposed to someone's presence you feel as if you've lost a quart of plasma, avoid that presence. You need it like you need pernicious anemia. We don't like to hear the word vampire here, trying to improve our PR. Interdependence is the key word. Enlightened interdependence. Life in all of its rich variety. Take a little, leave a little. However, by the inexorable logistics of the vampiric process, they always take more than they leave. I feel like that's also another one that the Soska sisters threw in there to call out the Hollywood types that they had to deal with. Because can you imagine how many psychic vampires are in L.A.? Like, a lot, I would imagine.
Maybe energy vampires.
They just leave you drained. It's like, yeah. Oh, my God, will they stop talking about themselves? Like,
yes.
For fuck's sake.
I see. Okay, I want to disagree here. I know you keep saying vampire, and maybe that's what the intention was. I'm not getting vampires from this. I'm getting zombie, you know, disease / infected human.
Well, they are infected humans, the ones that they create, but it's like they feed on blood. So it goes all the way back to our very first episode, which inspired Night of the Living Dead, the last man on Earth, a.k.a. Omega Man, a.k.a. I Am Legend. They're technically vampires, but are they that much different from zombies when it's all said and done?
I don't think so, except for I think zombies can come out during the daylight. Although I, for the longest time, thought that once daylight came, the zombies died, because that's what happened in Night of the Living Dead. But and that's what gave me hope, because my dad's like, well, don't worry, because if you survive the night, they're dead by the next day. And I don't, dead by dawn, no. It's not a thing anymore.
Especially with The Walking Dead in that very first episode where Rick ends up in the middle of downtown
Atlanta.
Yeah. And he has to get inside. The horse has to die.
I know.
I hate. It's in the comics, so
yeah, it is.
So he can get inside the tank, and then he's fucked because how's he gonna get out of the tank? You know.
I like how that dumb motherfucker shot inside the tank. I guess he had to.
Well, he had the one in there with him, but yeah, it's like he shoots and then like he can't hear anything. But
anyways, yeah.
But that cemented that zombies are a threat no matter what time of day it is, because it was daylight for sure. Whenever, you know.
Yeah.
And we've had several movies where they've been out in the day anyways, but it's worse at night just because we as humans can't see them. They can still sense us however they go about doing their thing. I mean, they can't see any better than us, but they can smell, they can go by sound better than we can, whatever it is. They got the advantage at night. We're fucked.
Yeah.
And we always have been at night anyways. That's why we always fear nighttime things, because we suck at night. Like during the day, we'll fucking kill you all day long. We're good at killing, but not at night. That's not our time. The photo of Burl's wife in the movie that he looks at is of 1970s Lynn Lowry, the lead actress of David Cronenberg's first film, Shivers, from 1975.
That's actually pretty cool.
And Shivers is actually pseudo along the lines of these movies, to be honest.
I thought so. I feel like I've seen... Is there a newer version of Shivers, though?
Maybe, but the plot of Shivers is that there is a parasite that a guy creates while trying to create a cure for, like, you know, deadly diseases and all that. And it gets loose, and everybody that it touches becomes obsessed with sexually...
Oh,
transmitting the you know, the parasite to other people. So they all basically, they're zombies, but they'll fuck you type zombies, which might be scarier in all ways, shapes, and forms.
Yeah, because you guys are fucking suckers. You guys are all, the male species is doomed at that point.
Well, but then wait a second,
do the guys get rapey too? Rapey?
Oh, yeah. Everybody gets rapey. Okay. Like in Shivers. And it's funny because if you think about it, Rabbit is not that much different, because it's just from the female perspective.
Yeah.
Like, she's the one doing the, you know, the rapiness of it.
Well,
so
she's more or less attracting the guys, giving them what they think that they want.
They think they want, yeah.
And then they get more than they bargained for.
Listen, honestly, guys are so fucked up in the head that if she would have gave them a little bit of the other stuff and then killed them, like a praying mantis situation, they would have probably been fine with it.
Oh, yeah. Like, honestly. Yeah, you guys are fucking easy like a Sunday morning, you know?
It's just the fact that they didn't get the good before they got the eating that was the problem, you know?
Fucking
suckers. And finally, producer Paul Lalonde is most known for his Christian films, including Left Behind the movie starring Kirk Cameron, as well as the remake Left Behind starring Nicolas Cage. Rabid marks his first non-religious project, but is it non-religious? Because like I said, there's some, you know, pseudo satanic transhumanism stuff maybe in this movie.
I mean, as my father's conversation with me just a few days ago went, you can't have God without the devil.
It's true. And if Burroughs thinks he's God, but he, you know, he's representing the anti version, then, you know, he might be the Antichrist in this. I don't, you know, whatever. But
rebuke.
I'm going to go first on this one because you went first last time. This one is a solid 4 for me, with the opportunity to go up, because when this movie was over with, I wanted to watch it again.
Oh, yeah.
Like immediately.
Mm-hmm. Is that
and
it?
When I read the reviews, I was like, I don't understand why people are not getting this movie. I think it's really well done.
Yeah, I haven't read any reviews, but just based off what you're telling me alone, I don't get it. I honestly don't.
they're just throwing it out there. They, a lot of them are comparing it to the original movie. And I mean, obviously I gave it a 3.3. I think this is way better than the first movie. And it's easy to be that way because again, Cronenberg was a baby in the craft. He's much better now. And I would hold Crimes of the Future way over this. That's, don't get me wrong, but this is a pretty fun, really well thought out movie. I enjoy the theme of it. It is a feminist theme done right.
Absolutely. This is, you can have feminism. I cannot feminize right now. You can have feminism and it be done correctly like this. And you have women rooting. You even have men rooting, honestly.
Yeah, because I mean, you empathize with the main character. They establish her in such a way that you get to know her. It's more personable than the first movie. You understand Rose and you understand her struggle, even when she's a monster, because it's not her fault. A man basically made her that way, whatever. I mean, that, you know, and she's just trying to deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
It's not the feminism that Marvel, aka Disney, gives us, where it's like, men bad, we be like men, we just be buffed up, you know, hateful women who look like men. That's not feminism, folks. Mm-mm. That's maybe transgender-ish.
Yeah.
I don't know, but no, it's not feminism.
Even transgender women have an aura of feminine to them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like more so than some of the Marvel ladies do.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's like jacked up on fucking the test, you know, the testy for these women, that it's just, maybe they just had a little bit too much testosterone and now they're losing their goddamn minds, which will fucking happen. I'm sorry, but I'm calling it like I see it, you know, and I don't like it. So...
And giving the Soska sisters their credit, because they have written, I mean, a very well-reviewed comic of Black Widow, and they did Yara for, you know, Ripaverse, and with this character, they understand the power that women have, and it's, and the femininity, or however you want to say it, of women, and it's not, you know, like a guy with slightly less testosterone like Marvel thinks it is.
If women did a better job of understanding the power they have without forcing people to see the power, if they focused just on the power that we already have and understand the privileges that are given to us just for being women, this world would be a happier place. I truly believe that. I think our boyfriends, our husbands, our partners, even if your partner is a woman, I think they would be happier if you understand the power you hold as a woman. And like I said, the privileges, we are very privileged. If you just understand that and appreciate it, we all could be happier in this world. But y'all want to go out there and act like a goddamn fool. So that's all I have to say about that. I am giving this movie a 5. This movie's a 5 for me.
I'm happy to hear it because, like I said, I could see it really moving up for me too.
Yeah, so. 5 out of 5 rotting corpses. My qualifications are, you know, I feel like I'm sounding easier these days. And of a genre that I hate, really. You know, there was fear in this movie. There was dread. There was a woman fighting her inner and outer demons just in life in general. So the struggles were there. She really sold the fact that she was in pain and being driven by hunger and pain, you know?
Yeah,
multiple 100%. Things. I thought that the gore was amazing. I liked the story that got her to where she was. It was believable how she got to where she was. It wasn't just like, oh, I kind of fell into this. I liked her on-screen chemistry with almost every person she encountered. And I don't think it's just her. I think that everyone just worked very well together. I really liked her and her best friend because they were both literally dying. They were at the fashion show, the one thing they've always wanted, and they were literally enjoying it for the last time because they will never be able to experience that ever again, given the circumstances. And that was kind of emotional for me because her friend was literally dying, and she's like, I wouldn't miss this for the world.
Yeah, I mean, and she's... And her friend even called it out. She's like, this is what we wanted. I'm, you know... premiering one of your designs.
Yeah, and no animosity between either one of them. Like, Rose isn't upset about her being the model and being gorgeous, and the model isn't jealous about Rose making the design that got her to where she... They're, like, literally helping each other as a team instead of being against each other. And that's feminism, honestly.
It is. I thought it was interesting, too. A little visual thing that they did. And it, I mean, I thought about it a while ago, but it's a perfect time to bring it up because you mentioned that scene. Her character, Chelsea, is supposed to have like this almost like teeth, like, yes, you know, metal thing sitting on her.
Oh, I love
but
when thing.
She turns, when she turns, the beautiful thing that the Saska sisters did, and it's a little thing, it's not there anymore because it's her real teeth that are the
yes
thing that she's using as the weapon, you know?
Yeah.
Because she is now a full on, you know, rabid zombie or whatever.
I knew she was turning into a zombie. I'd kind of hoped that that thing would be shown kind of preventing her from being the best zombie she could be. Alas, it did not. And it was, I still felt bad for her when she died, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, like, Rose is trying to make her way to her, and she just has to watch as she gets shot, you
yes
know? Like, I mean, that's all she can do.
Yeah. So, anyways, a 5 for me. If this were on TV, I would watch it. I want to make sure this is in my library because it's something that I would put on just to watch. There wasn't anything, other than small nitpicks we had, there wasn't anything that took away from what I've rated this film. I am genuinely surprised. I am also even more surprised that 1977 did as well, considering I watched this one first. I gave the 1977 one a 4. That's not something I do.
No, it's not.
So, and you know what? I don't care that other people don't like it as much. Maybe I like trash films. If that's the case, then I like trash films. I don't know what to tell you, but this is one I would highly recommend watching. This is a rewatch for me, and I know that I've told you that if I don't rewatch it, it's usually a good thing because it's so scary. This one isn't as scary. I mean, it's scary. It's
but the
scary
aggression
enough
of the zombies is still there.
Yes.
Like, they are very aggressive
the
in this
movie.
The
fear is there, but it's not the only thing driving this film. There's all kinds of emotions in this film, and it's just one of those things that kept me on edge the whole time. And then at the end, God, the end was so woof, you know? That was like, oh, all of that for nothing.
Yeah, listen, when just having the abomination physically represented on the budget that they had, they sold me. I was like, this is the perfect bow to this movie and I don't care that the ratings are bad either, because I don't think the people are seeing it the right way. I mean, and I don't mean that like this, you know, hoity-toity way. I think that they're like, you know, taking it like they're not, the Saska sisters really put a lot of thought into like what, you know, I mean, like we talked about it, like how sure even her clothing changes to represent her, all that. And like, I'll dig that whenever that stuff is apparent enough to where you don't have to sit there and be like, what was the meaning of this? No, they put it there if you're willing to put the effort in. And
yeah,
good movies require effort. Like, I mean, you know, if you put in the effort and they put in the effort, you can, I mean, you both get something out of it. You
yes
know, that way.
Definitely. So I am surprised the movie did not do better. I hope it gets a better following, like a cult following. It's a little too early, to be honest. It's only 5 years out since this movie came out. So within the next 5 years, if it's going to have a cult following, that's when it's going to get started, in my opinion. So
I think a 10-year mark, it's going to find its audience finally, because I feel like 2019 also, think about when it was released, 2020 cut all cultural ties people had to about everything.
Yes.
So it's got that severed point to it anyway, so it's going to take, you know, like even longer for people to kind of come back and say, what movies came out right before that change,
yes,
that were, you know, and then they'll come back and they're like, this is a fucking great movie, like why did it not, you know, do any better than it did?
Yeah, we hope you think that. We hope you think that about the film. If you don't, or if you do, sound off in the comments. We definitely want to hear what you have to say about it. If you haven't watched it, please give, if nothing else, give the 2019 a shot.
Give it a chance.
Yes.
I mean, don't go by the ratings. We horror fans never go by the ratings, mm-hmm, because we know that our favorite films are usually sixes at best.
Yeah.
If you see a horror film that's a 9, especially from critics, it's usually a violent nature type movie that will leave you in a coma, you know, yeah, when you're done watching it.
You know, I don't like the critics. Like, IMDb is pretty spot on, I think. This one got like a was this one like a 6 on IMDb or 5?
It was a 5-ish, okay, maybe bordering on 6. And the reviewers were a lot of just watchers, so I can't really, I mean, but it's still a 5's better. I mean, yes, you know, some movies get a 2. So, I mean, it's not.
Feel like this one got it. This one got even less on from the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. Hold on, let me pull up real quick. Because that's what I usually kind of look at. Oops, I should probably pull up actually 2019, so it doesn't just give me the definition of what rabbit is. Let me see. Nope, that's Reddit. There's Rotten Tomatoes. So it got a 31% audience score. I am genuinely surprised. It's only around 100 ratings, so I don't think a lot of people saw it, and I don't know what those viewers were expecting when they saw it. It's hard to tell. So if you've seen this and if you're going to watch it, please come back to our podcast. Please go on YouTube, I think, is where you can do the best comments. You know, I think Spotify also has a comment section. I have not seen any comments on Spotify, but let us know what you thought, because I'm curious.
And a quick little throw it out there type review. If you like this, if you're into Cronenberg, give Crimes of the Future a try. It's another movie that came out right around the same time as this. Maybe like a couple years after, got really harmed by COVID, you know, again, breaking all ties. I want to say right off the first watching of that movie, I gave it a 4.5, and it can go up because that's a thinky movie. Like, you... That one's slower than this movie, but the story is like, I love where he's going with it. But yeah, this movie for sure, like, way better than they're giving it credit. So, you know, at least in our opinion, yeah, you know. All right, folks. With that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.